What are you looking at?
Huh? Me?
Yeah.
I'm trying to find this fucking quote from Steve Bannon where he talks about like what Western heritage is.
Right.
Like he defines it, and he defines it by three cities. I know one of them is Jerusalem, and I'm trying to think of what
it's
the other two
Athens.
Are.
Athens. One of them.
I think so. It's like Jerusalem, Athens, Rome or something. Or it's Jerusalem,
Athens,
D.C.
Cairo and Istanbul.
Of course. But I can't find the goddamn quote because I wanted to compare it because it's basically exactly the thesis of fucking Shapiro's
no,
book.
It's Jerusalem, Athens, and Chicago, baby. No. Chicago.
Atlanta. Jerusalem.
It's actually Terre Haute.
Terre Haute, Indiana.
Yeah, I'm going to say
an E1 fan.
I'm going to say Athens, Jerusalem, and D.C. I think that's what it is. And that's the exact same.
DC, D.C. Right. has literally never produced
no,
any.
D.C. is not a city.
Yeah. Is that it was the Jews created it. Like religion is this product of a Judeo-Christian process, which culminates in like a value system that is durable and leads to social flourishing. Simultaneous to that is a revolution in human reason that starts in Athens and gives man governance over his passions and allows him to negotiate with others in the form of politics. And those things were brought together and perfected with the American Revolution.
Right.
That's the theory that Shapiro puts forward, and that's his definition of like Western civilization. And that is basically
exactly what
Steve Bannon says. Yeah. It's the exact same thing. It's the same idealist miasma.
Like this book, I think, is Shapiro's attempt to rebrand.
Oh, yeah.
So after like leaving Breitbart, essentially for being bullied. He said it was out of defense of Michelle Fields. Like he was doing it, you know, he was trying to act like
he was a woman protector.
Yeah, he was a woman protector or whatever. All 5'4" of them. And I think it was actually pretty obvious what was happening is that he said this is not like Andrew Breitbart's legacy.
Yeah.
And what he basically meant is that he thought that because, you know, Breitbart sucked enough wasp cock that they let him in the country club that he was going to be the new in-house Jew.
Yeah.
And then when Bannon came in and was just like, yeah, we don't like you anymore. You know, and he hearkened back to some more traditional right-wing texts.
A little Father Coughlin action.
Some protocols.
Protocols were followed.
Time religion.
So he suddenly, like, he saw which way the wind was blowing, but also people were more interested in Steve Bannon because he didn't speak in, like, platitudes.
And he wore four shirts at the same time.
And he was hot.
He was hot.
Really
sexy.
People
wanted to fuck him.
People looked at this stud getting off the bus, and they saw his rippling midsection in seven layers of Lacoste shirts, his barber jacket shimmering, both from just the aura of Steve Bannon and the coke sweat pouring out.
No,
they saw this absolute stud whose midsection looked like those Bell cheeses if you let a baby chew them and spit them out. It's a torso of those, and they're like, we need to fuck on this guy intellectually. I want to give him a sexy blowjob.
Oh my god! Yeah. Thank you.
That's what this book is.
But trying to find a new way in. The reason I said Coughlin though is because the reason Bannon supplanted Shapiro is because he harkened back to that old time religion of right wing populism during the Depression, which is basically what we've been in since 2008, even though nobody wants to admit it. And that's the conditions that are shaping like what people want. And so he's there with that Coughlin style, right wing nationalism. Whereas Shapiro, he is a sun sign patriot. His Buckley-esque ideology is an ideology of plenty. Mm-hmm. It's an ideology where the bellies are full and you can kind of have an intellectual approach to politics. When things get skint, when your kids start dropping like flies from fentanyl overdoses, the florid voice of a whiskey drunk Irishman telling you about the American, stab in the back by the cultural elite, and the hardy virtue of the lumpen American, white person, there's going to be a lot more receptive to that. And he's just trying to, like, do it over again. It's like, dude, this is not your time.
But Bannon, who is, like, we'll go ahead and say not very smart, still better read than Ben Shapiro.
Ben Shapiro's read, like, four Bill Bennett books about American history. It's the same thing.
It's completely, the whole book is like a, it's like a survey of Western thought, which I've said before. I'm fine with canon, Like, you want to talk about dead white men, like, that's fine, especially because, like, those are the ideas that did, for better or worse, shape the world.
That's true. You need to know about them to know how it happened.
Exactly. But he clearly did not do the reading.
Oh, God. It's
he has no
most
idea
surface,
what's going on.
It's the most surface-ass Jonah Goldberg. Hey, if anybody knows anything about the Founding Fathers, slip me a line. You know, I'd like to use your research for myself.
He was just like, and I don't know a lot about this stuff either because, like, it's boring and, like, I'm cool. But, like, I mean, like, literally when I hear the word, like, teleology, I, like, black out and, like, hear the baby elephant song. But, like, when he gets to the Marx part, the first thing he starts talking about is, like, Marx's belief in human nature. It, like, he's just, he has no idea what any of these people said.
Yeah.
This is a... It's like a like
it's not a thing.
A bad like dumps. Freshman
yeah,
like
that's
like
the whole first that it's not a thing.
This is like a first semester freshman year like intro to like you know Western civilization and thought, and it's written at that level or probably okay. So just to formally introduce the show and what we're talking about today, this is Chapo. We're here, and I wanted to take a dip into young master Ben Shapiro's latest masterpiece. I am going to warn you, it is not as uproariously funny as his attempt at writing a novel.
It's really tedious.
This is really tedious, and he is, again, incredibly impressed with, like, you know, what he thinks of in himself as this huge breadth of knowledge about Western civilization.
He's a dumber Steve Bannon.
But yeah, less Coke.
Yeah.
He's on like,
you need the Coke to do that reading.
Monster energy drink.
Yeah.
Steve Bannon does funny things. Like, when he was, like, it was like the first week of Trump's presidency, and they were like, doesn't the entire National Security Council just fucking hate each other? Aren't you guys just getting nothing done and everyone hates the shit out of each other? And it's just like a constant backstabbing. And
he's a messy bitch.
Yeah, you're just getting pushed out by people who've been in government and haven't just been writing blogs for 10 years. And Steve Bannon was like, well, you know, it's like Dostoevsky says. All families are different. He fucked it up.
No, he's so much better. He's so much better than Shapiro, because if you hung out, and this is why I think journalists love Bannon so much, and why he was more magnetic, just because if you're stuck in a room with both of these guys, one of them by the end of it is like, I want to kill myself. Only one of them is going to talk to you about how you should buy a minor league baseball team together.
Yeah. Bannon, like, I feel like...
I wonder if Bannon is the kind of coke user I am, where he just gets really supportive.
Yeah, I bet he is.
He's you should write that play.
Geert, you're doing such a good job in Netherlands, dude.
We should
take
a rock climbing class, like, right now.
Geert, your hair is amazing. Geert,
I bet you'd be good at it.
That's why there are so many, like, good, terrible far-right art projects, is because Steve Bannon just hung out with enough guys, and he's like, yeah, you should totally write a play where Claudius comes back to life in modern day LA and shows up these gangbangers with classical knowledge or whatever the fuck he's into. Ben Shapiro has some funny stuff. Like, he's had a bunch of things where he's like, my favorite tweet from Ben Shapiro is the one where he goes, the fact that people listen to rap music instead of Mozart proves that many people are stupid. But it
gotcha.
It's just like, do you want to hang out with that guy? No, I don't want to hang out with either of them, but I feel like, yeah, you have a higher chance of fun with Bannon.
So the title of Ben Shapiro's...
Also, he makes you feel pretty.
The title of Ben Shapiro's new book is called The Right Side of History, How Reason and Moral Purpose Made the West Great. And this is like the newest entry in a line of these boilerplate fucking conservative dad books about, like you said, this... like, I don't know, high school level intro to Western civilization, of which the point is, like, there's a reason America is the greatest country in the world, and it's because of God and rational thought.
It's just, and he is literally one of those Twitter accounts that just has classical Greek statuary. Like, he's that kind. He's pivoting into that kind of right winger.
Well, that's the new skin they're putting on racism, because it's not palatable to be about
racial categories.
But
that literally just bit him in the ass. I don't know how he didn't see it coming, just from a self-preservational kind of point of view. It's like when a Schlafly, like, you know, smacked down equal rights amendment, and then she really thought she was going to get a cabinet position.
Yeah.
And, like, Gloria Steinem, who I think is a goof and I have a lot of problems with, which
she's
like,
the feds.
She's
the feds,
she
too,
is a feds,
low key.
Yeah. But she was like, poor Phyllis, tommed her way right out of a job.
Okay, so and then the subhead here and the flap copy just says, America has a God-shaped hole in its heart.
Argues New York Times bestselling author
Ben Shapiro.
Hit me in that God-shaped hole. And we shouldn't fill it with
politics and hate. We've got a big-ass hole, and we need to stuff it with God, not politics and hate.
Can you please
God my nag hole?
America is gaping right now.
I just want to say, the reason I wanted to talk about this and look at his book this week is, like, again, like, the backdrop to this is basically the pogrom that he is beginning to try to inspire both against Ilhan Omar, Muslims of any kind in this country, and immigrants of any kind.
Yeah.
So he's trying to say that, like, oh, we've become so divided and hateful, but, like, let's look at it why. And I think it is interesting. Like, the book is, like I said, dog shit and incredibly tedious.
It is so bad.
But I think, like I said, the pivot and like the what he's attempting to pull off here, I think, does speak to a certain kind of right wing politics that is trying to be in vogue now. Because, I mean, famously, Ben Shapiro, again, he's another one of these very anti Trump guys who, again, strangely, have sort of come around on that for some odd reason.
You know what it is? I blame the Democrats for not being a reasonable opposition. Exactly. You went too far to the left.
We did not read the whole book. I farmed out a few of these chapters. I read the introduction and first chapter, which I think basically tell you everything you need to know. But I'd like to join me and us now in going through some of this book. And I think it will become apparent what he's trying to do here. So the very first line of the book is, this book is about two mysteries. The first mystery, why are things so good? The second mystery, why are we blowing it?
And damn, Matt, why am I so good?
Matt, like you said, like his,
why am I so thick?
His politics is the conservatism of a time of plenty.
Yep.
And this is essentially what he's is setting up in his introduction, is that, like, this Panglossian view of America as, like, hey, everything is so great. People have TVs and cars and, like, you know, for the most part, you know, food is plentifully available, and, like, but why are we so damn depressed?
He also provides, by the way, extremely faulty information on infant and maternal mortality rates.
I'll get into that. So he goes, in 1900, some 10% of all infants died before reaching their first birthday in the United States. In other countries, the number was far higher. Approximately one in every 100 mothers could expect a giant childbirth. And he's going, like, oh, using infant mortality rate as an example of, like, it's dropped dramatically and, like, as you did in, like, the 19th century or whatever. But the thing is, like, America still, our infant mortality rate is dog shit compared to, like, other first world
countries.
It's dog
shit compared to Cuba.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Cuba kicks our ass.
He goes, we live in an era in which the vast majority of the American population lives in climate-controlled spaces with plenty of food, a car, and at least one television.
And there's no way any of that will ever end.
We can speak with each other across thousands of miles, instantaneously, find and collate information with a touch of a few keys, send money seamlessly whirring around the globe
on the information superhighway,
and buy products manufactured in dozens of different places for cents on the dollars without leaving our homes.
It's like a 50s educational
video.
Yeah,
and he's going like, yeah, exactly.
It's a film strip.
I'm Troy McClure.
Look at America's vast agricultural yields. Beep. It's fields of barley. Beep. Wheat. Beep. Millet.
Yeah, and then he goes on to say, there are no restrictions barring particular races or genders from particular jobs. No governmental rules designed to privilege one particular biological or religious in-group at the expense of any other out-group.
What's a biological group?
Oh, we know what he means.
But I like to say, like, you know, everything's so good in America because, you know, we have these freedoms that, like, there are no laws barring the practice of religion or certain people from holding certain kind of jobs. Unlike what me, Ben Shapiro, has been trying to accomplish in my entire political career, either at the National Review or Breitbart, is setting up precisely those religious tests for employment or holding office. I mean, there is a good chunk of the GOP base right now that literally thinks that there's, like, a law that can be enforced that's like, if you're a Muslim, like, you can't hold office in America.
Yeah, no, there's some fucking copypasta boomer meme going around about how there's some law in the books from the 50s that could be invoked to just kick Ilhan Omar out of Congress and then maybe deport her.
Now,
and
dude,
like, activate the dang 1954 alien laws.
I spent a lot of time researching the law, and during the space race there, it was called the Moon Act. And we could not have any persons or individual style humans who worship the moon, as it were. And Muslimically, they worship the Quran, which is a lunar object. The Quran was cast down by the demon god Muhammad from lunar scenarios to tactically ascertain a Kaaba-style cube here on Earth that connects with Muhammad and Allah, the moon prince, as it were. And Ilhan Omar, she will pray to this moon god every day. And due to the stipulations of the 1953 Moon Act, she will be rejected and ejected back to her lunar home.
Felix, as you're well aware, one of the first major silent films is about our war on the Muslimic moon god.
Mm-hmm. The French were very ahead of the times.
They've always had a problem with that.
The spirit of Charles Martel was alive in that rocket that crashed into Allah's lunar Muslimic eye.
So
he could not see all the infidels that one day, but of course he repaired it using Islamic magics.
So this is I want to point out one of the we're aware of the Ben Shapiro's style when he's writing fiction, which is to just reuse cliches the most
bears of men everywhere
numbing way possible, and then describe the ghetto style kid wearing a Bart Simpson t-shirt.
Homer says, Simpson t-shirt.
Kiss my ass, buddy.
And Homer Simpson t-shirt.
Oh, wait, Homer.
It's a Homer Simpson t-shirt.
He looked at it.
I have a Duffman t-shirt. I have Desert Storm Bart.
Of course.
I have an Italian. I have never seen a Homer Simpson t-shirt
ever.
I collect bootleg Barts and I don't own.
It's not a thing, dude.
He looked at his beeper. What's up? The Budweiser commercial. Remember that? It said.
So that's his style of writing fiction. His style of writing supposed to be a very serious nonfiction book that is about the big ideas of Western culture. What he does is he'll say something like, okay, here, conspiracies have replaced reason and subjective perceptions have replaced objective observation. Facts have been buried to make way for our feelings. A society of essential oils.
Oh, I hate those feelings.
A society
so much.
Of essential oils and self-esteem has replaced the society of logic. That is his attempt to be like.
Those are for the God-shaped hole. You need oil.
You got to lube up that hole with essential oils.
That's his attempt to craft an interesting sentence or idea. And then he'll end a paragraph like that. And then what he does is every time, over and over again, spends the next page or so just dryly citing statistics. In the most boring way, he's like, to prove my point, what I'll just said, did you know just 43% of voters had a favorable opinion of Hillary Clinton and 38% of voters had a favorable opinion? And then literally for another page, in July 2007, Pew Research found 47% of just reciting
he's
statistics
just padding,
like this.
Yeah.
Like,
no, that's not
padding
even,
it out.
This
like,
is
anything
a bad
on fucking poll numbers?
Excuse.
Exactly. This is the way, if you're a bad writer in college, this is how you pad out an essay.
I remember, by the way, moving to New York and being very sort of intimidated by everyone and how much they had read. And my friend Jen Pan, God love her, gave me the best advice ever because she went to read. And she was like, Amber, the one thing you need to go into this knowing, everyone's lying about having done the reading. So if you read just a little bit, you will have read more than all of the people that went to these Ivy League schools. And he is that Harvard guy that lies about doing the reading. He's literally, this is a high school student's term paper trick.
No, and also, how are you going to hang any argument on unaggregated poll results? Like, these are literally individual polls of and not even of binary choices of sentiment.
Yeah. Approval.
That just shows, you're
approval
just filling things out.
Nothing.
It's like, this looks... This
80,
looks real.
80% of Americans said America was more divided today than ever.
Says who?
Ever. I don't know. There are citations here for it.
No,
I'm sure,
but like one poll is never anything other than a transient snapshot.
And again,
you cannot
this is
use
all
it
polls,
to make any kind
it's
of
all
long,
polls and
like,
holes
deep
with,
argument.
With Ben Shapiro.
And that, like I said, all these sightings of Gallup polls goes on for two pages. And then he gets back to the point he's trying to make, which he says, brutal division has infused every aspect of our social fabric. We can't watch a football game together without debating the merits of
what?
Protesting.
The
during the
world.
National anthem,
we literally can't.
Or watch a television show without falling into debates over representation of women, or go to church without arguing over our vote. We fight harder and
Who
more
are
viciously.
You in church?
We fight harder and more viciously over smaller and smaller matters. The more frivolous the topic, the harsher the battles. What in the world happened? And then he goes, there are some trendy answers. Some blame our current political and social disintegration on heightened economic divides. He dismisses that right off the bat by saying, they say too many Americans feel left behind by the new globalized economy and that either mild protectionism or redistributionism will heal those ills.
That's absurd.
They argue that the 1% have outpaced the 99%, that urbanites have outpaced rural Americans, that white-collar jobs have outpaced blue-collar jobs. And then he says, income mobility hasn't changed significantly in the United States since the 1970s.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, it's stultified. You fucking asshole. That's when it all went to shit.
Yeah. He's like, since the 1970s, the wages of the American worker has been totally stagnant in 4 decades.
Flatlined for 40. There's been an accompanying 40 years of increased efficiency.
Yeah, no huge upsets.
That's insane.
Fine.
And Matt, you'll like this. The next paragraph he says,
or productivity.
Exactly. Productivity has risen as wages have remained stagnant for 4 decades.
Theft.
And Matt, you'll love this. He goes, the Great Depression didn't tear us apart the way we're torn apart today, and our economy has indeed grown steadily since 2009. One of the reasons it didn't tear us apart is because of
Great fucking New Deal, you douchebag.
Yeah, exactly. Because
we WPA tried to address it.
Yeah, exactly.
Because we addressed the fucking thing instead of just letting the canker just grow unattended, fucking gangrene to set in.
No, I think it's because we filled our hole.
We emptied our hole.
Everyone in the Tennessee Valley got their holes filled up real
without
good.
Without compensation, yeah, it wasn't fair. Yeah,
they did get
And then he talks about...
My family's still mad about that.
He talks about race, blah, blah, blah. By talking about race, he spends about 2 pages just block quoting Ta-Nehisi Coates.
Of course.
He wrote this at 3 a.m. right before it was due.
Oh, yeah, totally.
And he goes, in truth, we're more racially equal than ever before in our history, more equal than any other society in human history.
Then
he goes on with the stats. In 1958, just 4% of Americans approved of black-white intermarriage. In 2003, that statistic was 87%.
Still a lot of people who don't approve of interracial relationships.
87% approved in 2003.
I know, but that's still a lot who don't.
And then, you know, he says, like, it can't possibly be race because we've solved those racial problems. Yep.
I think he would find it more convenient to say that it was race, though, because, like...
No, because he's not going to fight the race war. He's determined to not actually say the quiet part loud.
Right.
He's going to keep it neutral. And like, that's his whole effort. And that's why he's been superseded by the real, you know, stem-winding white populace, because they're willing to do that. And he will not cross the Rubicon, which means him having to make up all this bullshit.
He won't cross the Rubicon now, but like we all know, like he's had numerous comments about like Trayvon Martin would be alive today if he wasn't a thug.
He gets as close as he can to the edge, but he's determined that he's not going to cross it. For now, he could honestly just decide, fuck it.
It would age him, and his whole thing is that he was like a wunderkind.
Yeah.
He's like, he still thinks of himself as a 35-year-old child prodigy.
Oh, no, totally. A little violin boy.
And then he goes, okay, a third popular argument suggests our national disintegration suggests technology is the culprit. Social media, we hear, is dividing us more than
ever. 44% of people said that, why don't they call it a dumb phone?
And he goes on to dismiss that as well. And he goes, finally, there's the most basic argument of all. For whatever reason, human nature has kicked back in. We're naturally tribal, naturally possessive, naturally angry. For a while, we suppressed those instincts. We called it the Enlightenment. Jonah Goldberg, in his masterful Suicide of the West, calls that overthrow of human instinct the miracle.
So, yeah, you know, that's always good. Your theory should always depend on a literal miracle that you even call that. That's always a good sign that you've got a really persuasive model.
A miracle that saves us from, ultimately hostile human nature that were mean, hateful creatures.
Yeah, so that you turn human history into just this fucking fairy tale. I mean, it's the opposite of dialectics. It's the opposite of materialism. It just says this is a totally just a fairy tale battle between good and evil.
You know what it is? It's teleology.
Yeah, and it's just nothing but Deus ex machina after Deus ex machina. It's just, you're showing it. You're circling the remainder and saying, look, I have not solved this fucking equation, and you're just basically daring somebody to point it out.
He says, this book argues that Western civilization, including our
Western civilization.
This book argues that Western civilization, including our modern notions of values and reason and science, was built on deep foundations. And this book argues that we're tossing away what's best about our civilization because we've forgotten that those foundations even exist. So where did this book come from? It came from my sense, widely reflected, I think, that we're tearing each other apart.
Ah, Lisa!
That realization hit me on a precise date, February 25th, 2016. Late in 2015, I'd started a speaking tour on college campuses.
Oh, God, of course.
People were mean to him on college. The entire thesis of this book.
They're mean to me on college campuses, mommy.
Was inspired by people being mean to him on college campuses.
Of course it was.
And he goes,
oh, I'm so tired.
I gave a speech to students on campus, viewed a half million times. And he includes his viewing stats on YouTube. Viewed a half million times online within a week.
Did you see his author bio?
What did it say?
It literally ends with, and is one of the most requested campus speakers in the country.
Oh, God.
And he said, I posited that all people of good heart want to fight racism, but that vague charges of institutional racism and white privilege obscured individual evil and slandered the country more broadly. I attended the speech without security. Everything went well despite an attempt to pull the fire alarm, and students lined up for a broad questions and answer based session.
Really, everything went great. Someone tried to pull the fire alarm.
Well, here he goes. Just 3 months later came the rude awakening. I was scheduled to give a speech to the Young Americas Foundation group at California State University at Los Angeles. 2 weeks in advance of the speech, we began hearing rumblings about protests. The week before the speech, the president of the university announced the event had been canceled outright. I refused to accede to that clear breach of the First Amendment rights. My taxpayer dollars had gone to the California State University system, and I announced that I would show up anyway. My business partner, Jeremy Boring, I'm not kidding, that's Jeremy Boring.
I bet.
Insisted I bring a security team, but I was pretty skeptical. After all, I'd never needed security for any event, yet God is my bodyguard. Fuck that shit. No, I lift 4 pounds. That's my fucking
security.
How the
fuck you miss a whole 100 shots?
Yeah. And he goes, after all, this wasn't Fallujah. This was a major college campus in the middle of my home city.
All know there's nothing dangerous that ever happens on college campuses.
Just to be safe, Jeremy hired security anyway. Thank God I listened. On the day of the scheduled event, our security team began hearing rumors that violence was in the offing. An hour before the event, the president of the university announced that he would back down and the police would protect the speech. As we approached the campus, we could see helicopters swirling overhead. And then he just goes on about, like, hundreds of student protesters had filled the hallway outside the auditorium. They had blocked off all the entrances. A few rioters were physically assaulting students who wanted to enter. The police set up a backdoor route, but could not only sneak students in two at a time. I put my ear to the auditorium door. It sounded like a zombie apocalypse outside.
Literally more likely to die in like a random college campus school shooting than a
You're
protester.
More likely to you're more likely to injure yourself like slipping in the cafeteria.
Excuse me.
I mean, I think you can say yes, there is violence that befalls campuses. It tends to be from like
the
weird,
National Guard.
Yeah, the National Guard.
Excuse me.
And it tends to be like weird psychopaths that read too much Breitbart and bring a gun.
Excuse me. You are minimizing this. One of these hooligans held Ben at arm's length while Ben futilely tried to strike him.
He held his head back.
Yes.
Yeah. Swinging his arms.
Yes. He was flailing his little fists.
Can we just get rid of colleges?
Yes. Oh,
I'm so sick.
Yeah, not free college. Abolish college.
Save the left, burn out of university.
Oh, I feel like a dam just burst. That's the solution to this.
I've been saying this for 2 years. God.
We're getting
the
nothing
one thing
out
those
of
Maoists and Lachinois were correct about. They just didn't quite understand why.
No, we're like every point of college is just credentialism.
It's about reproducing
the upper class. It's just laundering privilege. Every one of these skills that we need can be accomplished otherwise than this absurd institution. Get the fuck rid of it.
It is a daycare.
Oh, it is a daycare. It is a propaganda mill. It's just an ideology factory. It sucks.
It produces Ben Shapiro's.
It creates class traitors is what it does.
Yeah.
It manufactures a million things in your head. To turn class solidarity into alienation and
yeah,
to
like
launder
Mark
the
said,
privilege
the,
of the wealthy.
The ruling class immediately finds representatives from the people it's oppressing and puts them into little positions, and that's how the representation argument still serves to reproduce capital.
Yeah. Just abolish college. Come on, Bernie. Just
no
say
college.
It.
Well,
schools
I mean,
out, motherfuckers.
I mean, like what so
schools been closed forever.
So like the thing that's funding college, you know, taxes in some cases, and in other cases it's like Bob Iger will send his kids there And so they can do what? So they can become influencers or work for his company. They can do that without college.
Yeah.
And then the other people.
Laura Loughlin's going to jail because she got to get into college, and she now just takes pictures of her fucking tummy tea on Instagram. Yeah.
Aunt Becky.
First of all, college has ensnared Lori Loughlin, who
she was led astray.
She's very
here's
come on,
see, here's the things about Lori Loughlin. She's pretty and she's nice.
She was ensnared by this scam
that has been going on for hundreds of years, known as college.
Just let your
She just got caught.
That was her crime.
Yeah. And now, like, all we hear with college is, you know, Ben Shapiro tried to talk there and people threw a coconut at him or whatever. I don't care. I don't care. Yeah. I don't care about anything.
Nothing good has come out of the student movement since civil rights.
There are advantages in bringing people together and stuff, but I feel like they are outweighed by the disadvantages.
Well, specifically as campuses have become completely isolated from the larger communities. It's like, well, we're going to keep you in a tiny little vacuum sealed room. And they're like, we're doing politics. And it's like, no,
together.
You're renovating the country club.
Exactly. Like, you bring people together, but just to end up sterilizing their activism by keeping it in that
facing inward,
totally inward facing and non-threatening milieu.
Well, Felix, you say, like, you don't care if someone throws a coconut Ben Shapiro's head.
I don't care. I think they should all do it. I think, like, there should be no speakers because it's just a scam for the speaker. They're just gonna go there and say shit they say in a YouTube video for $250,000.
Oh God, yeah.
So I think all the right wing students and all the left wing students, they should just have put on armor and joust each other. All of them should be medieval times. Yeah,
you get your knight. And you're both on one side, and your vote, and you're all rooting for your knight, and that's
how
we're
going to be a referee. There should be a referee.
Medieval times.
No, you just settle it. You settle it with the Greek week contest at the end of Revenge of the Nerds.
Okay,
where they had to like do the belch, and they had to do the pageant,
and that will decide who gets to invite speakers for the next year. Noam Chomsky or Ben Shapiro?
Yes, that's how you do it. Clap your hands, everybody! Everybody, clap your hands.
Chris, edit in the music they do in Revenge of the
It's a great song.
Clap your hands, everybody, and everybody clap your hands. We lambda, 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 and Omega Mu. And we've come here on stage tonight to do a show for you.
So, you say you don't care if someone throws a coconut at Ben Shapiro, but I would submit this, you know, in response to that. After the speech was over, I wanted to go out and mingle with the protesters. At which point, my security team and the police pulled me backstage. If you go outside, one of the officers warned me, we can protect you from the first guy who throws a punch and also the second guy, but not the third guy.
Here's the thing, Mr. Shapiro. I cannot count that high. I am not blessed Hanukkah-ly to count.
I don't have your skills.
I've never reached number three.
I don't speak Rosh Hashanah. Mr. Shapiro, I'm afraid that when E. Honda throws his Hadouken at you, we'll be able to block the first and the second strikes, but the third one will be beyond our grasp.
I mean, like, this is proof enough to get rid of college.
Yep.
They're over two punches thrown.
Yep.
That's
so
enough.
What Ben is saying in the introduction of this book is that, like, his entire motivation for writing this incredibly tedious book that's been written a million times before is when he finally realized we're losing what made Western civilization great, but as he calls them, the violent rioters that made fun of him at college.
The urban thugs.
Yeah.
The hip-hop thugs.
Here's my favorite part, though. He goes, during the election cycle, I was highly critical of both candidates. As a conservative, I'd been a lifelong critic of Hillary Clinton, but I was also highly critical of Donald Trump. Thanks to my criticisms of Trump, and thanks to my very public break with Breitbart News, an outlet I believed had become a propaganda tool for the Trump campaign, I quickly found myself targeted by a new breed of radical. In late March, the execrable Milo Yiannopoulos penned a story at Breitbart openly praising the alt-right, including odes to racist cretins like Richard Spencer. I'm sorry, like, the difference in my mind between Richard Spencer and Ben Shapiro is nil.
Minuscule.
Ben likes Jews and Richard Spencer doesn't.
No, that's it.
But, well, actually, no, I would argue
actually,
this.
Richard Spencer likes Jews too.
Well, he likes them in Israel.
That's his thing, is that they're the only real split in the right. The only real split in the right is, what do you do with the Jews? One side of the right says Jews are fine. They're like white people as long as they have their own country and they should be there. The other side says, no, they are a pathogen. They are bacteriological, and they will destroy any society from within unless they're extirpated. That's the only real divide.
I got to say, I disagree, mainly because I think their audience share is completely different. So Ben Shapiro is trying to get college Republican nerds, like the Republicans that don't scare him. And Richard Spencer was trying to get like these downwardly mobile lumpens. And that didn't work because they quickly realized that he is also a fancy lad.
And a college Republican nerd.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. A college Republican nerd that like got a haircut or whatever. So it's all about who they are trying to sort of triangulate their audience to.
And I think they're aiming for different segments of the population.
Different market shares.
But their personality and beliefs are, I would need a jeweler's loop to tell the difference. So he goes, egging on his alt-right followers, cheering on their jolly trollery. Milo sent me a picture of a black baby on the day of my son's birth that May. The point being that I was a cuck.
He is a cuck. That's his whole thing.
No, that's being a cuck is the degree to which you won't cross the fucking line. And he won't do it. He's defined his whole thing by not doing it. So he is the definitive cuck.
So here's where he gets into he's reaching back into history to give you a history of thought.
Ooh, yes.
And now, when I start reading these sections, if you have some sort of alcohol available to you, or maybe like a vape pen, bong, just a joint or something, I want you to do a shot, take a hit, use your intoxicant of choice every time you hear the phrase Jerusalem and Athens, okay?
Very popular cities also for Steve Bannon.
Let's go.
No difference.
We believe freedom is built upon the twin notions that God created every human in his image and that human beings are capable of investigating and exploring God's world. These notions were born in Jerusalem and Athens, respectively. Oh God, this is such bad writing. Those twin notions, those diamonds of spiritual genius,
fuck off,
built our civilization and built us as individuals.
Diamonds of the gibberish.
Here he goes. If you believe that life is more than a materialistic pleasures and pain avoidance, you are a product of Jerusalem and Athens. Shot. If you believe that the government has no right to intrude upon the exercise of your individual will and that you are bound by moral duty to pursue virtue, you are a product of Jerusalem and Athens. If you believe that human beings are capable of bettering our world through the use of our reason and are bound by higher purpose to do so, you are a product of Jerusalem and Athens. Next paragraph, literally first sentence. Jerusalem and Athens built science. Jerusalem and Athens built science.
Let's ask the Chinese. Mayans, anybody.
I am not, opposed to the idea of discussing Western canon again because of how it's.
No, I like it. We talked about Moby Dick last week.
Yeah, totally. But like the idea that like virtue is a. He literally said virtue is a Western concept.
Yeah, right.
That's literally psychotic.
Yeah.
That's. Actually psychotic.
Well, the thing is that, all right, take your own life. Think about how complicated it is to you. Think about like trying to explain a week in your decision-making to a friend of yours or what happened in your life. It would be hard for you to even understand it, and you fucking live
I don't know why I do
so
what I do.
So think about how much harder it is to understand the incredible web and complexity of human history, the tapestry of events that made up our lives and why we're here. So when you think of how hard that is, I think you should keep that in mind anytime somebody wants to give you an explanation for how that world works with something like, well, once there were two enchanted cities and the king lived there and he was very wise. This is the most simplistic fairy tale and it explicitly sells it to you as a fairy tale.
And here's the thing, like the classical world of like, Plato and Aristotle, they did contribute and then when the Roman Empire was made into Christendom, basically, the philosophy of them underscored what would later go on to be Augustine and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
But he's the Jerusalem and Athens thing, what they're doing here is he keeps coming back to the phrase Judeo-Christian values.
Of course, that made up thing we all love.
Again, cuck move to move. The Jewish neocons are not cucks. They have found a way to be Jewish and a Republican in a way that does not cuck them. If you are a Buckley-esque Jew, you are the biggest cuck. You are literally the biggest cock.
He's trying to be a wasp.
He's trying to be a wasp. He spends the entire fourth chapter just fawning over American Protestants.
Yep.
Oh, God.
No, he needs to watch A Gentleman's Agreement. Like, dude, you know, Gregory Peck.
He literally
in that
movie, says, like, the shortcomings of Judaism and, like, Catholicism to some degree are that they relied on structure. Yeah. And rather than just faith,
yeah,
rather than just the idea of just, you know, religious ecstasy hitting you in the face, yeah, like he picks the literal worst parts.
Yeah, but he said that that's the thing that made it spread faster. And the thing is, well, that doesn't tell you it's better. It just says
gonorrhea
more
spreads
viral.
Fast.
Exactly, viral spreads. Syphilis spreads really fast. Like, that doesn't mean it good just because it was more effective at spreading the pathogen of Christianity.
But the point I want to make is he uses Jerusalem and Athens over and over again because he wants to harp on this. The Judeo-Christian, which, as we've mentioned before on the show, is an idea that was invented out of whole cloth pretty much in the 1980s to just do a patch on the software update of evangelical Christians so that they could be like,
it's
we love
Israel.
State of Israel. Boop. And they're like, we're the heirs to the Judeo-Christian heritage.
And the funny
and
part
values.
Is now that's they don't need that anymore because now they're fully on board with, well, we need them there for
people
the rapture.
People forget, too.
We need them there,
like,
for the end of the world.
There were, like, serious Catholic anti-Semites into the early 90s.
Oh, yeah.
Like, and it was just fine. It's very recent that we're like, we have to tone that down.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, but they've moved the Overton window back, and he's really shocked by it. When it wasn't that long ago, when you could just
James
be an
Burnham
open anti-Semite.
Anti-Semitic.
So here he goes. He goes, Jerusalem and Athens built science. That's one sentence. The twin ideals of Judeo-Christian values and Greek natural law reasoning built human rights. They built prosperity, peace, and artistic beauty, which, again, heretofore did not exist in anywhere in the planet.
Anywhere
else. Jerusalem and Athens built America, ended slavery, defeated the Nazis and the communists, lifted billions from poverty, and gave billions spiritual purpose. Okay, I'm going to go through those. The sort of foggy, like the mystification that's going on here with history, where he's like, it's all this unbroken chain leading to right now our most perfect of all worlds, which is based on Greek natural law. I'm sorry, all of that classic 5th century Athens shit that we all love and so much, they love the hell out of slavery. That's why they had all the free time thinking about
just
caves.
Think
and
about
shit.
Bullshit. Yeah.
Yeah.
But also, like, we literally regressed from that anyway into Western society, into we innovated slavery into chattel slavery, which is literally worse than the slavery.
And it was by refining it that we were able to supercharge capitalism.
Capitalism, and just accelerate through to developing the nation.
Capitalism is the nitro booster in the engine slavery is the nitro booster in the engine of capitalism. It catalyzed it. It pushed in so much raw material and liquefied the markets to such a degree that it made capital accumulation so much faster, and it exacerbated technological innovation. It was the fuel in the fucking rocket sled of capitalism, slavery. It made it possible.
Jerusalem and Athens were the foundations of the Magna Carta and the Treaty of Westphalia.
Oh, I love it.
They were the foundations of the Declaration of Independence.
Big fan of the Treaty of Westphalia.
It gets my dick so hard, Westphalia.
Abraham,
I prefer the Treaty of Windphalia, but what are you going to do?
This is the Weir Wint Treaty. Now you guys got to see how the sausage get made.
Yeah, man. Sometimes you have a problem.
Yeah.
Okay. Declaration of Independence. Abraham Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation.
This is a pre-toke episode,
and
by the way.
Martin Luther King's letter from Birmingham Jail. Yes.
So just everything you barely remember from junior high history.
Okay, so in the previous sentence, he said Jerusalem and Athens defeated the Nazis. In the next sentence, civilizations that rejected Jerusalem and Athens
Marx beat the Nazis.
And the tension between them have collapsed into dust. The USSR rejected Judeo-Christian values
and
Greek natural law, substituting the values of the collective and a new utopian vision of social justice, and they starved and slaughtered tens of millions of human beings. And like I said, also defeated the Nazis in World War II. The Nazis.
I don't understand. Like, he comes to these great thinkers. He does mention Marx. He completely doesn't understand Marx at all. But if you're going to attribute the wins of societies created by thinkers, then Marx beat the Nazis.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, he got those turnip farmers to get their shit together.
Oh, they got their shit together.
We are in the process of abandoning Judeo-Christian values and Greek natural law, favoring moral subjectivism and the rule of passion. The funny thing about Greek natural law is that, like, natural law is what's always cited by, like, weirdo Catholic reactionaries like, as their justification for why sodomy is, like, always a sin and wrong.
Ironically, though,
you know who also invented sodomy?
They love
Athens.
They love that shit. Their natural law did not. Their natural law was towels optional.
I think their natural law said that it was okay as long as you just held their thighs together.
Oh, right. Yeah, you had to frottage them. You couldn't go in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. See, there, it was, doesn't have anything about that.
In this
that was coined by the Greek philosopher Sisyphus.
But just think of this very small example, how much is lost in his retelling of these things and how much he simplifies into a cartoon that bears no relationship to reality.
And he goes, and we are watching our civilization collapse into age-old tribalism, individualistic hedonism, and moral subjectivism. Make no mistake, we are still living off the prosperity of the world built by... What are those two cities again?
Jerusalem
and Athens.
But see, this is perfect in that it totally exemplifies how it's a fairy tale, because... Given the way he describes the miracle of Athens and Jerusalem, that should be uninterrupted glory and improvement until the end time. It should be an unbroken string of development. Like, it's the perfect, it's the best system, therefore it's going to persist.
Well, why did we abandon it?
Exactly. And the answer is evil wizards. And it is. It's just totally idealistic horseshit about, like, this evil wizard named Marx cast a spell, and this other evil wizard named Martin Luther came down, and that those people bewitched people's minds into going back to their awful human.
And Matt,
now we live under Toronto and Gainesville. It's tragic. It's been terrible for society.
Matt, as you said about the wizards, the vast majority of this book is him taking his reader, who, again, like Ben Shapiro, as dumb as he is, I will give him credit for knowing how stupid his fans are. The respect he has for his fans is summed up in the fact that he sells them caffeine pills for $70 a bottle.
If anybody is hawking survival seeds or miracle brain tonics to you, that means they don't give a shit about your intellect. In fact, they're betting on you being a dumbass because they wouldn't sell any of
them. Ben Shapiro's fans are either like the most bullied kids in their schools or like college sophomores who are all named Dylan who like drink two natty shandies and are like, last night was savage.
That's exactly what it's like.
And just watch like Ben Shapiro owning trans people cringe comp.
No, but man, you said the magical cities gave us the winning formula that was winning for eternity.
We got the key that went into the magic rock.
And then the evil wizards like turned us away from it. The vast majority of this book, which thank dear Christ, I'm not going to read to you on the show.
No.
The vast majority of like the middle chapters of the entire book is him going through and giving you this high school freshman history of the Enlightenment and its major thinkers and telling you which ones were good and which ones are bad.
Yeah.
And he's like, John Locke, good. Rousseau, bad. And
well, the reason they're good. Again, his readers, like, they just want the footnotes.
Yeah.
And the reason that one is good and the other's bad is one is a liberal, the other's a conservative.
Yeah.
But one is a liberal and conservative based entirely on subjective definitions of what liberal and conservative means in 21st century America.
Oh, God, he's so ahistorical. Just absolute contempt for any kind of historical context for anything. Everything is evaluated from 21st century just superficial conservative array. Like, that's it. You know, it's awful.
The ties that bind us together are fraying. Those ties were forged through fire and water, reason and prayer.
Game of Thrones, baby. Tonight, I'm so fucking psyched. Gambo's going to get that throne, baby. He's Gambo's throne for a reason.
Forged through fire and water.
Forged through fire and water.
Reason and prayer. Again, he's a terrible writer. just awful. The tension between Jerusalem and Athens, Drink, is real. By removing the tension by abandoning either Jerusalem or Athens, Drink, collapses the bridge built between the two. So he's saying there's Jerusalem and Athens, but they're in tension. And what Western civilization did was build the bridge. But now the bridge is rickety.
See, this is like dialectics if you have a head injury. Because that is a dialectical reasoning that he is doing, but it's totally ideal. It's totally idealistic. It doesn't bear any relationship to material conditions.
Now there are two cities in the world. So you got South Bend, that's where Notre Dame is, and you got Des Moines. Now my brother lives in South Bend, and we haven't talked in a while, but in Des Moines, there's a Culver's that's open till 12, but they're very far away, and when the interstate is crowded. That's when things get rough. This is just a boring guy talking about geography. This is just
This
sucks, man.
This is nothing.
To quote
Hannibal, this is absolutely nothing.
He can't even really make up his mind about anything. Like he has like these semi-positive but conflicted views of like the way Christianity developed and its role in society. He wrote a book so that dumb people can feel smart because they can refer to Hume.
As
Hobbes would say.
How many pages did he stretch out of this?
It's not that long.
He stretched the whole.
No, he's not. He's not going to give you a
tome. He took that whole and stretched it.
I wouldn't be surprised if it's less than 300
pages. It's 288
pages.
I knew it.
That's 300 pages.
It's long for what he has.
But in terms of his pretensions, it's hilarious.
There are wide margins.
That's a booklet for dullards.
He widened the margins.
That's a thing to read on the crapper. And also, then you come out going, that was quite a Lockean dump I took.
Sorry, just two quick points I want to make. Like, he says that line, and it's on the jacket copy to his book, civilizations that rejected Jerusalem and Athens have collapsed into dust. Again, where does China or India fit into this equation?
Yeah, China had a
pretty good run.
Yeah, even by his own metrics.
And like, forget the communist revolution.
Be careful what you mean to in high school.
Yeah.
But like China has existed almost.
Well, that's because
like,
there's no these things are. What he's done is he's taken all the good things that people like and said these are exemplified by a cast of characters who are embody their good qualities. All the bad things are embodied in these people who are a cast of characters who embody their bad qualities. And then they just have it's literally you're recreating Olympian fucking mythology because now they're fighting on Mount Olympus. For the soul of humanity.
See,
and we have nothing to say about it.
I thought it was more like the animatronic Hall of Presidents.
Also that, it's all, you always
like
have to have an array of names.
You hear a little, and they kind of like move mechanically, and you come out of being like, was that educational?
Yeah.
I am Jeremy Bentham, the utilitarian philosopher.
The greatest
for the greatest number of people.
Yeah, and that's what this is in book four.
I don't know if he references Bentham in this book or where he falls on
he
him,
does.
But I'm going to guess he's against
he
Bentham.
No, I think he puts it in the same paragraph with like Thomas Aquinas or something. Like he's just name dropping. Like your worst friend who is like,
though.
Yeah, yesterday I was talking to my friend Natasha Lyonne. It's like your worst
fucking
friend.
Because utilitarianism is like one of their bet noirs.
Yeah.
That's one of the evil spirits, as he's utilitarianism.
And like the second point I want to make, aside from the fact that he glosses over like, vast swaths of human history that don't conform to the Jerusalem Athens theorem.
All this ghost stuff, all these spirits he's invoking, I'm feeling like Stirner right now.
The other thing is like, he keeps saying that like, we're so the Enlightenment, as in the masterful genius words of Jonah fucking Goldberg, was this like miracle where like just the key turned in everyone's minds.
Eureka!
They're like, oh, like we will no longer be tribalistic and governed by our like baser
the
instincts.
The square root of the Sassily's triangle is equal to the freedom of the remaining sides.
It should, I'm sure, as it will not come as any great shock to any of you listening to this show. Ben Shapiro is intensely driven by tribalistic loyalties and racial hatreds.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we all know his famous comment that Jews build things where Arabs enjoy living in sewage.
They enjoy living in sewage.
They enjoy living in sewage.
They love it.
They're not human beings.
Search any of his comments on any of the teenage black kids murdered by the police, and you will see some fairly obvious and base tribalism beginning to express itself. I would say a product of maybe unenlightenment thinking.
Yeah, but that's because the bad guys in his teleology are others. Racial others, religious others, cultural others that like are outside of his perfect little world and are trying to undermine it. For people on the left, like the things fucking up places are the actual people who benefit from the way things are. Those are the bad guys. Those are the nemesis. That's the cause of the problem. That's the person that you have to deal with, is the person whose material benefit is things staying as bad as they are and getting worse. And that's the difference between the left and right in terms of how you view like what the cause of social decay and problems are. And we say, no, it's the people benefiting from it, not the people in most cases who have the least amount of actual power in the society. Those are the people who you think are most responsible for its decline.
So I'm not going to do all of chapter one, but this is the one I read, and it's called The Pursuit of Happiness. And it's all about what makes people happy. And his answer to that question is moral purpose that is decided by a belief in God.
Yeah.
The Judeo-Christian God specifically. Yep.
Getting your hole filled makes you happy.
You got to fill the hole daily.
Mm-hmm. So, and he goes, chapter one begins, are you happy? It's a question my wife asked me one day a few years ago, probably because I was, as per usual, skulking around like a miserable little cunt with a dumb look on my face.
Crying
and bitching and whining constantly.
Take that, intolerant.
He goes, we were going through a stressful period. My wife is a doctor, and she was working brutal hours.
You'd never mention it.
Our youngest child, Gabriel, that's like Ashley Schaefer in fucking Eastbound and Down. Gabriel! My boy Gabriel, he walked in on me and my wife. I said, you watch, boy. Our youngest child, Gabriel, was waking up at all hours of the night. Our eldest, Leah, was going through a stretch in which he'd burst into tears at the tiniest provocation. Are you sure that wasn't your wife, Ben?
Yeah, seriously.
And work was trying to. My business partners and I were working to get our website, The Daily Wire, functioning at top level. Read into that, get some bizarre, like, dark money billionaire to underwrite our blogging and emailing.
Exactly.
So that, you know, I can cash a fat check by doing YouTube videos.
Yeah, after my tough weekend in a hot tub with Sheldon Adelson.
Oh, God. No, I'm just imagining that. Felix, do you like thinking about that?
Oh, man.
I'm imagining
it. You know how like soup gets a skin on the top?
Oh yeah. I was thinking about how there's gotta be like,
I'm imagining there's like it's Sheldon Adelson, so it's like a giant hot tub. Yeah. But there's sort of like a ramp / water slide that they pull up his little motor screw to and then sort of dump him into it. Sort of like
a lobster.
Like a turkey just like yeah, slides.
And like
into
a lobster, the air escaping from his folds make a screaming noise.
Yes, yes. Oh God.
He
looks like Zoidberg without his shell.
I mean, I'm not even going to say, you know, because that's the dream, is to share the hot tub with Sheldon Adelson.
Oh, God.
I just want to lick the residue out of the hot tub after they drain it.
Another connection here, Steve Bannon, well-known hot tub pimp.
And murderer, most likely.
He dissolved a body in a hot tub in a rental property.
He did a Walter White on someone's rental property. There's no other explanation. Allegedly.
He fucked it up, though. Like, everything, instead of being like, I'm Heisenberg, he was like, I am Dr. Asperger.
So he goes on to talk a lot about the pursuit of happiness and the phrase the pursuit of happiness, as we know. And he's like, we say it's the pursuit of happiness. People think government can give you happiness through health care or a basic standard of living.
But
you would
order.
Be wrong. The thing I want to point out again in this chapter and how utterly lazy and ahistorical he is in this invocation that, like, you know, progress cannot exist without virtue, and virtue cannot exist without our inherent moral reasoning, which cannot exist without the Judeo-Christian, the God of Abraham.
Of course.
Right? He glosses over entirely in like sucking off the founding fathers for creating the perfect document and perfect system of government, that they were by and large deists who rejected Orthodox Christianity explicitly.
Yeah.
He goes on and on about Jefferson. He's like, this is why Jefferson knew we weren't guaranteed happiness. Yeah. But again, mentions nothing about Jefferson. Literally was so full of himself that he did his own remix to the Bible.
He did. He cut out the miracles. He cut out the miracles of the Bible.
And it was just the moral teachings of Jesus of Nazareth is what he called
it.
Get
all that hogwash out of there. That is an alpha. That is definitely a pimp move. Gotta admit it.
That is
literally the equivalent of like translating the Bible into Klingon.
Or it's like that guy who made the Return of the Last Jedi without any women in it. That's the modern equivalent.
And so this one highlighted, this is like a subhead to the chapter. Happiness is moral purpose. Pleasure can be gained from a variety of activities. Golf,
filling your hole.
Well, pleasure can be gained from a variety of activities.
And that nut.
Golf, fishing, playing with your children, sex. I would reverse the order. I love that. Yeah. Like in his brain, like here are the five things that can make you happy. Golf. I'm sorry. Yeah. If golf makes you happy, your brain dead.
And if it's number one on the list, you're a psycho.
Fishing.
Oh my God. He's never been fishing in his life.
Off. No.
He would be the fucking bait.
First of all only goys fish. We know
except
this.
Except for Felix.
It's law.
I've caught a fish. I'm one for one in
he's
all my fishing attempts.
He's the goyest Jew, though. We know.
He is, yeah. He's a Midwestern boy.
I literally have a 100% success rate for fishing. I've never gone
it's
fishing.
It's like your slot machine system. You're like, I got a system for this.
No. The slot machine system, that's strategy and reaction times, mathematics. Whereas the fishing, that's just all luck and bullshit. No one's good at fishing. You're just lucky. You can be good at slots, though.
Okay.
So sex is at the bottom of his list.
Yeah.
Not quite as fun as golf.
Yeah, not as sketch as hooking an angler. Oh, I got a trout today.
And he goes, amoral activities can bring us pleasure. That temporary high.
Like golf.
That
sex.
Feeling of forgetting our cares. Yeah, golf is also deeply amoral.
Yeah.
I mean, think about the water that it takes to fucking use
golf
all these.
Golf is not even amoral. It's criminal. It's a criminal waste of land. Yeah.
Golf is like...
And resources.
If we can do for a two for one... That's the grand compromise. Conservatives want to get rid of college, you know, as do I.
Yes.
We have to get rid of golf.
Get rid
too.
Of golf.
Golf and college. If we get rid of golf and college.
That's a grand bargain.
We might have
30% of our like economic and class problems solved.
If we got rid of both of those, there might be like three more generations of humanity, honestly.
Yeah, we could honestly stretch it out a little bit further.
This is the new bargain. Jerusalem and Athens, that's over. Now we're making the grand bargain between Berkeley and Orlando, Florida.
Yep.
Yeah.
Golf and college.
Golf and college.
Get rid
we're
of
done
them.
With them.
Crap.
Done.
Crap.
No more of either of that bullshit. Mm-hmm.
I don't see why rich people can't just play with tech decks.
Yeah.
Play video games.
Foosball.
Have sex with their friends.
The ballerest
analog,
thing Chavez ever did was take over the fucking golf courses. And
yeah,
that
was definitely
cool. That was dope.
The amoral activities can give us that temporary high. He's talking about chewing. And
getting off that lounge.
The feeling of forgetting our cares. However, that pleasure is never enough. Lasting happiness can only be achieved through cultivation of soul and mind, which presumably he means watching PragerU videos.
Yep.
Or actually, if he's being honest, watching my YouTube videos, me, Ben Shapiro.
Watch me on trans people.
How does Ben Shapiro like do either? Is it just like when he plays violin with his dad?
Yeah.
That's literally what he means.
He,
that
he
sucks,
dude. He goes around the country just grimly triggering the libs. Is that a fulfilled person?
Yeah, he just means like, he just
that's not a happy person.
All right.
He like operates a website while his wife is a doctor, which he brings up a lot, but I think with some shame.
All he does
like, you
is
could
like,
cultivate your inner fucking garden if you didn't have all this hole to fill with all this bullshit.
He's miserable. Yeah. All he does is go to like whatever California, like go to Pomona or whatever, and like find some like 19-year-old who's on like three different types of benzodiazepines. Who can like barely make it through the question while like 12 Daily Wire cameras are on her and just demolish her with logic.
Yep.
Just absolutely demolish her. That sucks, dude. You're not cultivating shit.
You cultivate
my ass,
dude. You're finding the
dude.
Weakest people who are literally going to see you to be triggered.
You're just abusing people. You're abusing fragile people. It's like it's intellectual bum fights.
It's literally just the guy who took a month worth of karate classes beating up everyone in his hometown.
Yeah. It's some
it
Danny
sucks,
McBride
man.
Shit.
Stop it.
So he goes on a bit.
Oh, God. A movie about Danny McBride triggering libs on college campuses.
Oh,
being
that's
being like a grifter style, like a Ben guy. Oh, my God.
That's pretty good.
So, except it would probably have to be played by Walton Goggins instead of Danny.
He could be a competing huckster, a different guy on the scene. That's actually a good idea.
And then,
I'm writing that
and
down.
And then they become friends.
Of course. Oh, yeah.
So
he
goes on to talk about like how the Bible's vision of happiness is... We just surprised you to know that God wants you to be happy, but that doesn't mean just chuming or having sex or doing anything fun.
God mentions nothing about chuming.
And he goes, that's where you're wrong, Amber. If you read the Bible closely, there are many coded references. He goes, if all this sounds like a more restrictive version of happiness than we're used to, that's because it is. Happiness isn't rolling around in the mud at Woodstock, nor
it's
is
rocking the fuck out at Woodstock 99.
You are the oldest young man in the world.
And then he
making a Woodstock reference.
And then
these are presumably college students reading this. You can't even say Woodstock 99.
Still, like, the child prodigy just means you're stunted at an age that you
were
never
surrounded
were.
By your yeah. odd like, uncle, like your aunt sitting around smoking, going, "Oh my God, look at him." Their yeah. references are your
like,
references.
Ben is like in his he's like 70 years old because he says like at Woodstock he could have just said like a weekend at Coachella yeah. on Molly or something, but he goes, "Nor is it a nice golf game after a rough week of work." These are like the two poles in his mind.
These are the two poles of human behavior.
The freaked out hippies, man. They're rolling around in the mud at Woodstock. And then he's like, the square upright businessman goes plays a golf after a hard week in the office.
That's true. Fuck. That's so true. It's like when he closes his eyes, heaven is like an Enzyte commercial. And hell is, yeah, it's like the footage from Martin Scorsese's Woodstock. Do not eat the brown acid. Whoa, man.
But he's telling you, you know, he's mature enough to tell you, hey, golf guy, hey, wavy gravy, these things may feel good, but that's actually not real important yeah. happiness and yeah. moral meaning yeah. in your life.
This is his attempt to turn the chair around and sit in it the yeah. wrong way. Yeah. But, like, he just trips over his,
have
like,
have you ever
loafers?
Heard of a guy named J.C.? Judeo-Christian?
Yeah, you may think it's cool to, you know, golf for 30 years and collapse of cardiac arrest on the green while all your friends named Harold look at your body and a golf cart runs over your head. That may be cool to you. Or it may be cool. It may be cool. It may be cool to smoke seven bowls out of a bong and inject acid. While the monkeys are playing. But you know what's actually cool? To find the nearest 19-year-old who's already crying and destroy them.
Oh, my God.
So he goes, happy.
Oh, that is a good point. They are already crying.
Yeah, they
literally. Before he even says it, he finds the crying one.
He finds the crying one.
I've watched those.
It's shooting crying fish in a barrel. Yep.
I've watched those videos, like the Ben Shapiro most savage moment videos, and like literally all. They're already like shaking. Like they come up to the mic and they're like, Mr. Shapiro. Yeah, like. Come on, man.
Whereas, like, again, like,
yeah, they just got triggered by Arby's commercial.
If Ben Shapiro
they, like,
approaches you to own you or debate you, like, it's not difficult. Just say, like, fuck you, little man, and just ruffle his hair. Or just be like,
oh, look at the little fella.
This is a rhetorical technique.
Oh, is that okay? Is that a microphone?
Oh, look at you, little guy.
Hey, is it a rhetorical
how about you
technique
lick my asshole?
that I heard of, you know, from Buckley, that is just called giving someone a wedgie that you could get away with it. What would he do?
Oh, you could
what
wedgie
would he
him?
Do?
You could fucking hang him on a doorknob.
Yeah.
You'd be dangling.
Yeah. Kicking his little feet.
Kicking his little feet in
kicking at the clouds.
So he says, little guy. You know, happiness is not it's not a golf game and it's not Woodstock. It's the pursuit of purpose in our lives.
Oh, damn.
If we have lived with moral purpose, even death becomes less painful. Here's one of my favorite parts. When Washington Post columnist Charles Krauthammer knew that his death was imminent, I'm sorry, I'm just smiling a little to myself, thinking back on the moment in which his conscious brain knew that his own death was imminent. Wait, hold on a second. So let me just say, okay.
He's just. This is like an insult to Viktor Frankl.
Oh yeah,
he name checks Viktor Frankl.
This is such an assault on Viktor Frankl, like the guy who's a fucking. Who like lived through the Holocaust and just basically invented this amazing new way of thinking and wrote this seminal work. And just Ben Shapiro is like, yeah, I go to college campuses and find people with badly dyed hair and argue with them. I'm the same as you. Like, it just,
but he goes,
very, it's just very, it's hurtful to me.
More than anything, you love to see it.
Well,
I do love to see it.
He wrote a letter in anticipation of his passing. Here's what that great souled man wrote. I believe that the pursuit of truth and right ideas through honest debate and rigorous argument is a noble undertaking. I leave this life with no regrets.
Wow. One regret.
Don't dive in the pool.
I mean, he has to
see,
have regret.
I was going to say, like, if Charles Krauthammer did indeed lead a moral life, he would be leaving life racked with unbearable guilt about the millions of people he helped kill in insane wars that he started for moral and just reasons.
You heard him, though. No regrets.
In his dog shit Davros, Doctor Who style villain.
Yeah. No, he's the closest thing in the op-ed world we had to Dr. fucking Strangelove. I mean, he was just this perverse figure of, you worship death, like a lot of these guys.
Felix, you brought up Viktor Frankl, literally the next page. As Austrian psychiatrist Viktor Frankl wrote in his stirring memoir about surviving the Holocaust, Man's Search for Meaning, woe to him who saw no more sense in his life, no aim, no purpose, and therefore no point in carrying on.
Viktor Frankl would just euthanize you.
Frankl's feeling...
Like if he talked to you and you told him, you're like, golf is one way to live your life. Another way to live your life is to play violin with your dad. Frankl would just like, he would just like furrow his brow and look at his notes and just write, you know, euthanize immediately. He's not getting better. He's never finding purpose.
Sometimes death is kinder.
Yeah. He's got a chapter about like the meaning of life. And then there's a guy who wrote a book, literally Man's Search for Meaning. I mean, he's just running up the flag. It's just, I'm just giving you the signifiers. What would you expect in a chapter about that? Man's Search for Meaning.
Everything is sort of Chekhov's gun with Shapiro, but it's Chekhov's book.
Yes. Yes, that's it. He will always make the most obvious fucking book drop and name drop.
He's like an AdSense algorithm.
Yeah.
I see you're interested in meaning. Well, another book I've read.
No, totally.
Or another book I know of.
No, absolutely. It's like it's cliche. It's a cliche list.
So, Ben Shapiro, read Nausgaard 2019.
Now that would be something.
I feel like I'm reading Nausgaard.
He's rocks. Yeah. He's the man.
I like this section. He says, even the most ardent atheists have historically conceded that much. Voltaire famously stated, I want my lawyer, my tailor, my servants, even my wife to believe in God because I believe it means that I shall be cheated and robbed and cuckolded less often. If God did not exist, it would be necessary to invent him. I think a very funny quote by Voltaire.
Yeah,
but again,
God got owned
Ben Shapiro's bringing back to the cuckolding thing.
It's the second time he's brought that up.
Without belief in our innate individual value, we collapse into animals incapable of seeking moral purpose, even though we feel the need for it beating in our chest. Again, I just want to underscore again, Ben Shapiro has literally written an article, not just a tweet, saying collateral damage and civilian casualties in Iraq and of Arabs, like, doesn't matter to me. I think it's okay and worth
it. Think about it at all.
Because, like, I've made the moral judgment in mind that, like, their lives aren't... Literally, he said that their lives aren't worth the same as even a single American soldier.
Yep, he said that. Now, that's some fucking meaning.
That's just moral math.
That's the moral meaning right there.
He goes into talk about... there's another line I like. All of the American founders were self-help specialists.
Wait a minute. They sure as hell didn't help themselves pick the fucking cotton.
Yeah.
Well, he says Washington spent his formative years copying out rules for civility. And
those two things have to do with each other.
And he goes, wait, Benjamin Franklin was a notorious devotee of self-betterment. He actually created a calendar of virtues seeking to wipe out his tendency toward wrongdoing. Another thing, Ben Franklin was a notorious devotee of French widows and divorcees.
Of course.
Yeah. Yo, my man gotten it in.
Prostitutes and meetings of the Hellfire Club. You know that?
Yep.
He went to him and like Jonathan Ish or whatever his name, and were like having weird orgies underneath a church when he lived in London. He was a fucking perv.
Everyone in charge has always done that.
Yes,
of course.
Is
real. They just have, you know, mislocated the centrality of it.
I would love that.
All the good things these guys did in his mind can all be defined by their essential virtues. Everything bad they did is just a mistake or something.
Or it's an aberration and not the actual reflection
of... You get to pick which one counts. He gets to pick which part, which aspect of their character and their behavior counts.
I would love to have an orgy in the 18th century.
Oh, God.
I bet that smelled amazing.
I bet the smells
the wafting
amazing.
Smell. Oh, man.
I would love to get
the corsets.
I would love to get lead poisoning from my maiden's makeup.
Oh, yeah. That would be so good.
I love wearing a condom made out of a lobster shell.
Removing all those smegma covered lacy collars.
Baby. A lacy collar right around you.
Instead of a pearl necklace, you get a lacy collar. Gross.
We love to think about it.
By the way,
lobsters, sexy to be way grosser.
French women and prostitutes would use citrus rinds as diaphragms, which actually kind of worked because the acid would kill
sperm.
Yeah,
but you burn your pussy with citric acid.
Yeah, I imagine it hurts as well.
It can't feel good.
No, it's the past sucks so bad.
Oh, well,
sucks so
like,
bad.
We're not pinker people here, but like the past definitely sucks.
Oh, it was so
olden
bad.
Times were bad.
Oh, my God.
Okay, so here's the synthesis though. They put orange peels in their cooters. So Dan Quinn realized that the orange peel.
Speaking of playing the violin,
he realized that the orange peel had nothing to do with eating pussy. That eating pussy had to do with music, the violin. The orange peel could help in smoking weed and could help him beat 9 hits off of one bowl and potentially win the weed smoking Olympics.
Playing violin with my dad taught me how to eat pussy.
Yeah. Dan Quinn is Jerusalem and Athens.
Yes, he's 100%.
Yes. He has built the bridge.
Yeah. I could write.
Dan Quinn is Baltimore.
Well, Dan Quinn's Sacramento. He's the most Sacramento man. He's the most NorCal man. Mm. I think everyone in Northern California, they just wake up in their cars and start recording into their phones. Like, that's how, like, if you're married and you want your wife to, like, go to the grocery store on the way home from work, you just, your phone's on your dashboard and you're like, all right, listen up, you fucking pussy. I've been told you.
That's why, that is essentially one of the reasons I find myself physically repulsed by Ben Shapiro's or any of these videos or like owning a liberal or owning a, you know, homeless person with logic or whatever, is because I like YouTube videos where people get called out and owned, but like Dan Quinn, that's the real shit. Mm-hmm. Where he calls out Crazy Joe or the woman knocking on the door of the Burger King
I'm
bathroom.
Busy. It was the Starbucks.
Yeah, Starbucks bathroom, yeah.
I admit YouTube used to be, something awful happened where YouTube used to be just people like in their bathroom mirrors being like, and another thing for all you fucking pussies out there, yeah, I've had sex. Like, that went away and it just became like PragerU. PragerU and just algorithm. It sucked. It became like produced versions of that. Ben Shapiro could never be as compelling as Demonious X.
The thing is, like I've been reading, I've been reading you guys this and you, the listener, this book. Like, again, I cannot be stressed enough. Ben Shapiro is routinely talked about as a leading intellectual figure
cool
on the right.
Philosopher.
The cool kids philosopher, as the New York Times described him. His writing is dog shit. And it is written by a stupid person for stupid people. Yes. He cannot craft a compelling sentence or paragraph to save his life.
Nope.
The parts where he actually is describing his, like, you know, thesis or like the statements he's laying out are such childish nonsense. That, like, it is like a freshman in college
and the worst
paper
part of
that
it
would get
is
a
that
C.
It's a stupid person talking down to you. That's what it is. It's
he still has contempt.
He's condescending to you in the prose while being a fucking dullard, which is the worst possible combination.
Yeah. Right, people with an undue sense of intellectual confidence. Yeah. Just the best people.
Here's another line that I really like that will speak to his abilities as a writer. Our society was built on recognition of these four elements. Those
are fire.
No. It's breakdancing, graffiti, MCing, and
fine, torture, kill.
He says, the four elements, according to Ben, are individual moral purpose, individual capacity, collective moral purpose, and collective capacity. So that's just two things that he's applying to, two things.
I got an idea. People need, humans need purpose in a godless age. I agree. How about building fucking socialism? How's that for a purpose? How about getting humans to a point where we actually are free of the burdens of fucking history and of capitalism and can begin the very first time in history, begin the process of even trying to achieve human potential, all of which can only be done in the context of socialism, which we are horribly far from and which we have a responsibility personally and morally and collectively to fucking pursue, and that we could actually just find purpose in doing that?
Allowing the planet to be inhabitable 30 fucking years.
There's
from now.
Another fucking
There's
purpose.
There's a huge purpose.
That's
There's,
a good one. Does, like, are you going to tell me that a guy on a fucking sinking battleship trying to get guys into the lifeboats, that guy doesn't have meaning in that moment? He's got more meaning than he ever will again in his life.
Okay, I hear.
That's where we are.
I hear what you're saying, but like, can I counter that with? But what about Jerusalem and Athens? I would like to speak on those two cities for a moment, if I would.
Jerusalem's going to be a fucking lazy river if we don't do something.
So those are the four elements, but this is the thing I highlighted that I really like. Our society was built on the recognition of these four elements. The fusion of Athens and Jerusalem, tempered by the wit and wisdom of the founding fathers. Like, they're fucking like a Dave Barry book or something. They're potent quotables of Ben Franklin.
In Ben Shapiro's mind, the founding fathers changed human history by writing fan fiction about Jerusalem and Athens.
This guy's literally like a fucking Muppet in a kitchen going, well, you take a pinch of freedom and a dash of Judeo-Christianity, and it comes out America.
It's just like the same thing as like, Yeah, you know, previously I had always wondered what it would have been like if Link and Donkey Kong knew each other. This is Kingdom Hearts shit. This is Kingdom Hearts for Western civilization.
Yeah.
You know what? That actually is kind of what it's like. It's a giant game you get to play where it's just like Thomas Jefferson and Aristotle together?
It's like the end of Bill and Ted. Yeah. Where they're all on stage.
No, this was a terrible book. I didn't enjoy the parts that I had to read. I started to glaze over after a while, and I don't want to read anything about this again. I'm reading Nausgaard, nothing but that from now on.
How can Nausgaard write books that are like literally 500 times longer and just
and also
totally
just about like moving a refrigerator with your father-in-law? And they're great.
They're totally gripping. Like the part Nausgaard wrote like 100 pages about when he was dating a girl he didn't really like when he was 15, and it was a million times more interesting than any of this.
All right, I'm gonna close out the first chapter. He says here, the history of the West is built on interplay between these two pillars, divine meaning and reason, and I also the two cities that we mentioned. What were they again?
St. Paul and Minneapolis. Twin cities.
Yes. And there are actually bridges connecting
there
them.
There are.
But they're in a bad state of disrepair. We must invest in
one
infrastructure.
One of them fucking collapsed and killed a bunch of people.
We do believe that Somali-style ISIS has been pouring citrus acid on the bridge to weaken it over a course of 3 decades.
So he says, we receive our notions of divine meaning from a 3-millennia-old lineage stretching back to the ancient Jews. We receive our notions of reason from a 2,500-year-old lineage stretching back to the ancient Greeks. In rejecting those lineages, and first of all, who
he
is rejecting?
He still doesn't even really talk about, like,
it's just the idea that these things are defined by these trajectories only, and that no other culture has presented any versions of them.
And also, it has nothing to do with material reality.
Of course,
like
what's moving these things? What's in his mind?
Here's a guy for
you,
Hegel.
Yeah,
Hegel. He's a Hegelian. This man. This man is a filthy Hegelian.
You got to turn it over, like Marx did. You got to get to where the thing moving is the actual material reality. This is all just ghosts. This is just haunting.
So he goes, in rejecting those lineages, and again, like I'd like any sort of indication that America or the Western civilization has just rejected ancient Greek history or the Old Testament.
I mean, they're rejecting everything in the face of capitalism absorbing everything into a matrix of price and
so he goes, and again,
cost benefit.
I want you guys to remember
you
now.
You want to talk about killing God? That did a hell of a lot to do.
We started out our conversation talking about how Ben Shapiro is like left Breitbart because they're like, oh, they're anti-Semitic, and like this is the new like sort of racist right-wing populism that I can't fully sign on to, even though I basically kind of agree with it. Here's how he ends the chapter. In rejecting those lineages, in seeking to graft ourselves to rootless philosophical movements of the moment, cutting ourselves off from our own roots, we have damned ourselves to an existential wandering. We have become the rootless cosmopolitan wandering Jews, and we must make our way back to our roots.
Holy shit.
No, I'm one of the good ones.
Yeah, this kind of shit, that's the most anti-Semitic thing I've ever heard.
He's a cuck.
You can't get more cuck than a fucking anti-Semitic
Jew. He's trying to suck up to anti-Semites.
Holy
now.
Shit. That's astounding.
I know we've gone long with this one and probably definitely driven you guys crazy by reading this to you.
Yeah,
and,
no, we've lost our minds.
I just want to say, Matt, any other things you read?
The one that always takes my eye is the potted history of America going from, of reconciling the Constitution with slavery and Indian destruction, and how you make the founders these, paragons of human virtue when they were doing all this horrible stuff. And of course, it's like just classic Whig history, which is the literal opposite of the dialectical materialism, where it's all just ideas and everything getting better over time and just pulled magically along.
Okay, so ladies and gentlemen, that is Ben Shapiro. Those are the two cities that make the one city. We built this city on rock and roll.
It's rock and roll.
But before we leave you today, we have some exciting tour dates and things to plug. Starting with, we will be doing a show Friday, April 26th at Cornell University for their Union Days 2019, closing out
They're sort of, it's like a week-long event about, you know, unions and labor. We were doing a show at Cornell University on Friday, April 26th.
Can't wait to check out the gorgeous.
Oh, so many gorgeous.
Tickets are available. We will put the link to that in the show description.
Mm-hmm.
As we mentioned before, shortly thereafter that, May 1st, we will be doing a fundraiser show.
Very excited about this.
A night of Chapo pub quiz at Housing Works in Brooklyn on May 1st. Again, links for that will be...
We will all be writing categories, and Felix, I know things are probably going to change between now and then, but could you give anybody an example of where your head is at, maybe, where they might get your questions from?
I just wake up every day, I'm like, I'm going to get nutty with it today. So, if you want to get nice, you want to get nutty, you want to learn about whatever I care about that day, it might be the Romance of the Three Kingdoms. It might be New Wave Cinema. I may get really into Tears for Fears. I've already done that one, but I don't know. Look, a philosopher named Ben Shapiro once said that pleasure is not found in the golf course or in the opium den.
In the boardroom or the discoteca.
It's found just jumping from interest to interest every week until you no longer have to be alone with your own thoughts.
Yeah, that is the whole goal.
Whatever one I land on, then that's what you're getting.
Good luck, folks.
Okay,
you won't get a single one, pussies. You fucking suck. Don't worry. I'm just trying to fire them up for whatever category I pick.
All right, and then finally, to plug, and probably most excitingly,
amazing.
We are going on tour overseas, our first ever European tour.
Yep.
Beginning June 1st in Berlin, and from there we will be doing shows, and like we will have the actual dates, but it begins June 1st in Berlin. But we will be doing shows in London, Manchester, Glasgow, and Dublin, Ireland, closing out the tour on June 9th, I think.
You guys are all going to get so many awesome, flawless accents from me.
So if you are a Chapo...
We're going to get it run out of every single one of those.
If you are a Chapo
towns.
Fan from the European Union, and by that I mean England.
Yeah.
Part of
England is the head of the EU.
Head of the European Union.
I'm hearing that they're in negotiations to get the new headquarters. That's what they're talking about.
Yeah. So we are going to the European Union. I expect there will still be a European Union by then, maybe.
Probably.
But again, if you're a Chapo fan in Berlin, England, Scotland, and of course my favorite, the motherland, Ireland, Dublin, Ireland, we are coming. Nice. And if you are a Chapo fan, and I know actually we've looked at the statistics on this, we have an enormously, for such a small country, enormously outsized percentage of fans
in
Ireland.
Brilliant.
No idea.
So
why.
if you're in Ireland, if you're a Chapo fan,
they're
and you're like, oh, like come to Belfast or whatever. Get on a fucking train that lasts like an hour and
nowhere
to Dublin.
An hour away. You have a vital rail system.
You have no excuse
to not be at this fucking show, you fucking
right.
Mix.
So guys, we will see you in Germany, the global headquarter of comedy.
I cannot wait for us to kill by just seeing the toughest room. Like the only sound we hear is their collective nodding at a good joke.
All right. I'm breaking out my new bit special for Germany. It's about a man who unsuccessfully peels a banana. Just the funniest shit they've ever seen. We're going to see you in London, the head of the EU, as we've said, the capital of the EU. We will see you in Scotland, made famous by HBO's Game of Thrones.
Yep.
We will see you in Ireland, or as we call it, Israel too. Let's go. We're going EU style, baby.
Yeah, no, we're coming to the European Union. Our European tour, all the official dates, venues, tickets, will be available at chapotraphouse.com.
I think starting tomorrow, but maybe a day later, but very shortly.
chapotraphouse.com/tour.
Yep.
Be on the lookout there for dates and tickets.
But, yep.
Headline here, Europe. We're coming to you.
Yeah, we're coming into Europe. We're doing it.
So, and that does it for us this week.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.